1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 4. Today on the Covenant Eyes podcast, Luke will be interviewing Chris and Cindy Beal. Back in 2002, while working as a worship leader at a church, Chris confessed to committing adultery and to a deeply rooted pornography addiction. Today, Cindy will talk about how his addiction damaged their relationship, their intimacy, and how she wrestled with thoughts of inadequacy. In addition, Chris will talk about why confessing his sins was the beginning of the restoration process for them. Both Chris and Cindy will talk about how their close friends and their church supported them and mentored them through those difficult times.
I've learned a lot about his pornography addiction from him and just from other people, and just the fact that people are becoming more open about it. You know, 7 years ago, nobody talked about pornography. Yes, they would talk about alcoholism, drug addiction, but pornography, that was something that people didn't really talk about. So we were kind of out on our own. But I knew he struggled with pornography from the beginning. So I've always known he had that struggle. I just didn't know the extent of it. And I would get, early on, I would get so upset when I would find out or he would tell me, or a couple times I walked in on him, but most of the time it was him telling me I did this. And it was, at that point, I believe that it was just viewing. You know, I'm pretty confident that he was not unfaithful the whole time in our marriage. I know, I'm pretty sure the years that it started just because of the climate in our marriage. But I did take it personally because it had to do with us as a couple and me feeling like, okay, well, clearly I'm not good enough for him sexually because he's looking at pornography. And, you know, it didn't matter how hard I tried to stay skinny or if I got my hair highlighted just enough to be blonde, or I would always ask him, you know, how do you like my hair? Do you want it long and straight? Do you want it short? How do you want it? And so I did everything on my body to make sure that he was satisfied. Kind of, I tried to look like I did when we met, which is really difficult to do when you're getting older and having babies. But I tried, and he still looked at it. And so it finally dawned on me, especially, I think it really happened after his confession, I realized it's not about me. Mm. And as I talked to more women and men who've gone through similar struggles, I would find men who would have these full-blown addictions who, you know, were working through it and maybe even recovering, who had the most drop-dead gorgeous wives. And, you know, you hear people say, well, if she was taking care of him in the bedroom, then he wouldn't be out there looking. That is the biggest crock I've ever heard because I was available to my husband. And I've talked to more women who say they were available to their husband, and they still do it. So but for me, I learned that it really wasn't about me. It really wasn't, because no matter how, if I was skinny or had put on weight, he was still struggling. So I learned that, and that really helped me to see him as a person with an addiction or just a struggle, a sin struggle, like, you know, someone else who's got some other kind of issue. So the difference is that his pornography addiction did basically... he was just basically committing adultery with his eyes, you know what I mean? And so I learned to see him as my brother in Christ and not take it personally. And that's very difficult to do, especially as a woman, when we're bombarded with the way we should look. So I think that helped me a lot to see him as someone I could just encourage. Because if he had an alcohol addiction, I probably wouldn't have felt that about my self-esteem, maybe, or the way I looked, you know what I mean? So that's kind of the way I distinguish it. Those are the things that really, you know, just made me wake up and say, look, it's not about me. This is his thing. And I do feel like contributed. I do think that it takes two people to make a marriage work, and it takes two people to make a marriage fail. And so I know I contributed. Maybe I was enabling too much. Maybe I didn't say something, you know, but overall I was still available to him, and he still struggled. So
any other sort of thoughts that went through your mind as you considered your husband's sin that you look back on now and you recognize, oh, those were lies too. You know, I used to think that there was, that this was my, you know, I'm just not pretty enough. I'm just not this enough.
Right. What he finally told me, and it just made a ton of sense to me, because he was being validated by such a counterfeit material, when he would come to me, which is the way God intended it, he wasn't satisfied, or his mind wouldn't let him be satisfied with me because I was pure. I was the way God intended it. His mind was corrupt, basically, from all the viewing of pornography. And so that's why when I hear couples who say, well, we just look at it together, you know, I'm like, you have no idea what you're doing to your marriage. You know, it is deadly. This is, you know, sex is for you and your husband, period, in the bedroom. That's it, just the two of you. Nothing outside, no external stimulus coming in. So, but I did believe a lot of lies, but now I that's not something that I really believe anymore. I'm pretty confident knowing that he's satisfied with me now because his mind is pure.
So after these initial confessions, obviously there's a lot of shock and a lot of sadness going on at this time. You brought other people into the picture at that point and got help for these things. Who came into your life after everything came out through the process of this of recovery, and what advice did they give? How did they help you?
The short answer is we told everybody. You know, obviously I called Craig, our pastor, and our leadership team, and told them everything. And the leaders, like the elders of the church, basically surrounded us. And kind of the way Craig led through it was, we're going to basically tell you everything to do. And if you do it, we're going to be a part of the restoration in your lives. And if you don't want to do it, then we're just going to give you over to your sin and you're on your own. And he got up on stage that weekend at our church and basically, in fair amount of detail, communicated the reason for my resignation. And but that the reason he was saying it is that if everyone knows the truth of love, there's nothing to gossip about, because I was a pretty visible person at Life Church at the time.
Sure.
And so it gave people permission to know the truth without having to speculate. And then he led the church to not be the typical church that shoots its wounded. And he said, you know, we're going to love them, and this is going to be the hospital where they find healing, and we're going to be a part of that redemptive process. And so right off the bat, you got a few thousand people that are praying for us constantly. And one couple, Jim and Beth Kuykendall, who they're on staff at a church down in the Metroplex, Texas, they were kind of our mentors. And basically that first night, and for every night for the next month, they were on our living room floor crying with us and praying with us and filtering information for us because we were so confused and hurt and didn't know how to walk through this thing. And it was that living room floor organic conversation that healing began to really, really, really happen in an incredible rate of speed. We were, you know, we're kind of confronted with the reality of all my family and friends from other states know that I'm on staff at Life Church. You know, how am I going to remember who we told what to, you know? Because it's pretty overwhelming reality that, hey, I'm not on staff anymore. I'm working at Home Depot, which is what I was doing, and I'm just being a guy and trying to save my marriage. And so we decided that within those first couple of days that we're going to tell everybody. We're not going to try to remember who knows what, and we just I start getting on the phone, and Cindy started getting on the phone. We just started calling all of our friends and our family, and dude, exposure is an environment where healing happens.
Mm-hmm.
As petrifying as it is, it was 3,000 people at the time at Life Church were praying for us. They'd come up to us on the weekends because after that weekend, you know, we were coming and sitting in a pew just like everybody else, and they would come up and they would hug us. They'd ask us how we're doing, and you know, we told our families and all of our friends, and not all of them received the information warmly. Some of them were wanted justice served, and but man, that's a choice of the couple to make the, you know, in scripture in James, it says that, you know, we confess our sin to God that we could be forgiven, but we confess our sin one to another and pray for each other that we may be healed. And so that environment of exposure, bringing it into the light where God can work on it, was night and day for us.
Just the support. Craig Rochelle's probably one of my favorite people. He's, you know, my pastor, he's my friend. I mean, God did a miracle on our marriage, but Craig Rochelle was God's hands and feet who did it on this earth. Because many pastors are, when they get news like this, they're scared. They don't know what to do, what to say. And he chose a road that most men wouldn't. And I'm incredibly proud of him. And I feel like I owe him everything for that. And so he's pretty much up there in my book as far as one of the most amazing men ever. And then there's Jim and Beth, like Chris mentioned. You know, they had the ability to spend time with us. And we were drawn to each other before any of this ever came out. And we didn't know why. We really liked them. And there was just something about it. And now we know what it was. God was just knitting our hearts together. And so it was a really amazing time to see the transformation. And Jim would just, he had such vision, and he knew exactly what God was going to do. But he wouldn't tell us. He just said, I just need you to trust God, and I need you to just stay focused. And, you know, Beth would be there and giving me the words of wisdom that I needed, because I was absolutely beside myself. I didn't know what to do. I'm a pretty even-keeled person, but when you put me in a situation like that, I just flounder. And so she was there, you know. And so I'm very thankful for those people in our lives who really help us put our feet in front of the other, because I didn't know some days if I should walk to the right or to the left. I just didn't know what to do. Mm. And they literally, I felt like I was learning to walk again.
This has been part two of our interview with Chris and Cindy Beal. Stay tuned for part three, and they will talk about the process of forgiveness and rebuilding trust in your marriage. You've been listening to the Covenant Eyes podcast with your host, Luke Gilkerson. To hear more podcasts, visit covenanteyes.com/blog. That's covenanteyes.com/blog.